It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Have you ever sat in a meeting or been doing some routine task at your job and thought, why do we do it this way? Isn't there a better way? What about? Well, congratulations. You are walking down the road of curiosity, which our guest this hour says is vital. But sometimes the answer to the question is we've always done it this way, with implicit encouragement not to ask any more time-wasting questions. We're talking about fostering curiosity, mostly in the workplace, but also in life. Do you feel like you're encouraged to be curious, ask questions, and even break the rules at work? Or is that kind of thinking not really allowed? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest today is Francesca Gino. She is the author, a behavioral scientist, and Tandon Family Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School. Her most recent book is Rebel Talent, Why It Pays to Break the Rules at Work and in Life. Francesca, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you talk about this a lot. How do you define curiosity?
Curiosity is that impulse to seek new information and experience, and also that impulse of exploring novel possibility. And it's really a basic human attribute that we all share.
And so what happens when humans become curious? What exactly happens?
What's interesting is that we tend to ask a lot of questions and investigate. We really want to explore, and we have that sense of wonder. And I think we all experienced it. In fact, if you look at the data, curiosity seems to peak at the age of 4 and 5, but then it declines steadily after that. So for the parents out there, they're probably used to all sorts of why questions from little kids. I have a 5, 2.5, and 1 year old. So at least the 5 and the 2.5 are in that mode of, especially the 5 year old, why is the sky blue? Why do we have to receive receipts when we pay for things? Or why do we need to wear clothes when we're out there? And so the curiosity is there when we're born, and yet, because of the environment we are part of, schools, and then being part of organization, it seems to be shut down rather than really kept alive.
Yeah, you know, the fact that it peaks at 4 or 5 and then 5 is pretty much when we start school tells me that something is happening in school that shuts down kids' curiosity.
I see an interesting parallel in schools and also in organizations, and is the fact that often our focus is on getting things done or getting ready for the task or making sure that we check off whatever is the next item on our to-do list. And so there is this focus on execution, if you will, on getting things done, and that often happens at the cost of curiosity, of allowing us to really have this space to explore and wonder. And I remember one time when I was looking at different schools for my son, I was struck by a teacher, even in an art class, who was going around looking at the work of different children, and she saw them drawing and coloring outside of the lines. She would say, no, you really need to stay within the line. And that's a perfect example where in the small, we might be really stopping some curiosity or explorations. And so taking rules for granted rather than, why is it wrong to color outside the line? It's a different way of getting things done that maybe involves a little bit more exploration.
So you're a business professor at Harvard. You are used to dealing with people who want results. We just talked to a professor of education who was talking about how teachers are dealing with sort of this results-oriented expectations. Are results definitely counter to curiosity?
They are not. It's interesting that leaders, teachers, and all of us really seem to have sort of the wrong mindset about what it means to stay curious and what it means to explore. And often we think that letting ourselves, or for leaders, letting employees follow their curiosity will lead to all sorts of costly mess and things are not going to get done. And that is, in fact, not the case. There are organizations that foster curiosity that are doing quite well in the market, and they are full of employees that, in fact, execute on their task, but they also find the time to explore. And there are also great examples of companies that failed because the focus on efficiency and executing became so important and so salient that really people stopped being curious in a way that was hurtful to performance. So I think it starts from the wrong mindset about what being curious means and the fact that somehow is going to not lead to results, as you were saying.
So that's interesting. Give me an example of organizations that foster curiosity and are doing really well.
So there are many. You can think about some of the often mentioned organizations like Google. Google starts from hiring people for their curiosity. So often people use the example that comes from 2004 when there were an anonymous billboard on Highway 101 in the heart of Silicon Valley, and they were posing puzzles. And so if you were a curious engineer or a curious person, really, you would just go and try to solve the puzzle, and that would lead to a different one, and finally you would reach a web page where you could submit your CV to Google. So Google is one organization that fosters curiosity. Pixar Animation Studio is another one. But maybe my favorite example, which is an old one, is an Italian organization called Olivetti. So they're the organization that produced the first typewriter. And what was interesting is that back in the 30s and 40s, the CEO was really interested in not only making sure the people executed on the work, so these are people who work in factories, but also that people had the chance to stay curious. So he opened a library inside the organizations, or he changed, when he took over, he changed the time that he gave to people to have lunch. So he used to say that 1 hour was for eating and 1 hour was for culture. And what he meant is that during the second hour, people could go to the library or they could go to an open space where they could listen to novelists and important people in Italy went in to talk about certain issues. And so it was a way for him to trigger some interest, even outside of work, to make sure that workers' curiosity stayed alive. And it's probably my favorite example because it happened at a time in the 40s when everybody was talking about specialization and Taylorism and efficiency, and it seemed like his views were quite different, and he was focusing on really the development of people's curiosity.
When I was hiring people, I would always ask people what their passion was, because I knew that I wanted people who were capable of being passionate about something, even if it wasn't passionate about what we were hiring them for. Is passion a part of this curiosity, a part of this being able to be a change maker?
Yes, it's passion, and it's also this eagerness to find answers to questions that seem intriguing to you. So curiosity involves some learning, but it goes beyond that. So you can think about interview questions like the type of questions that Google uses. Have you ever found yourself unable to stop looking for an answer to something that you've not encountered before? So you're really trying to get at whether there is this eagerness to just explore and learn. So in a sense, it requires a lot of passion.
We are talking to Francesco Gino. She's a professor at Harvard Business School. We're talking about curiosity. We're talking about being rebellious in organizations and how that works. We will get to more of that in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Generally, curiosity is discouraged in our society. We are warned against being too curious about not doing what we're told, and we're told this from childhood. Our guest this hour says that that's a mistake, that being curious helps us be better people and better workers and better leaders, and it doesn't necessarily take more time. Have you worked at a job where innovation was expected? What about a job where you were expected to just do what you were told? What was it like for both of those jobs? 800-642-1234, or you can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Francisco Gino is an author and a behavioral scientist and a professor at Harvard Business School. And she talks to a lot of corporations about how to foster curiosity and foster rebelliousness. I have to ask you, Francesca, when you talk to corporations and you use the word rebelliousness, what's generally the response that you get?
It depends. So sometimes the association has a positive aspect of it. So people are thinking, she's talking about making sure that the workplace is more innovative. But there is also a lot of fear because rebelliousness involves breaking rules. And so the first thing that I try to do, which is also why I wrote the book, is making sure that people understand that we need to shift our thinking around rebelliousness. That being a rebel doesn't mean to be an outcast or a troublemaker, but it really means creating positive change that is good for the organization. So rebels are people who break rules that should, in fact, be broken, and these are rules that hold them and others back. So I try to shift their thinking right from the start by giving some examples that really explain what I mean by being an effective rebel.
So in your research, you found this link between curiosity and actually fewer decision-making errors. Talk to me about that.
What is interesting about curiosity is that, as I find in my research, we are less likely to make errors that we usually make in our decision-making because we are more likely to consider alternatives. So, for example, one of the things that we all tend to do, or fall prey to, if you will, is a bias called confirmation bias. What it means is that we tend to look for information that confirms our beliefs or our ideas. And this is one that I think we can all relate to. Whenever I'm thinking about making a decision, whether in my personal life or my professional life, I usually go to people without too much thinking that I know are going to support my idea.
Right.
Or I try to look for data that shows me that the decisions that I'm about to make is right. So that's the confirmation bias. And what I find in my research is that, for instance, when you are curious or you trigger curiosity in people, they're much better able to look for evidence that does not confirm that they're right, but that might prove that they're wrong. And so it's quite important to stay curious in our lives, both when it comes to our personal life, but also when it comes to work.
A few minutes ago, you talked about organizations that foster curiosity, but you also mentioned organizations that have failed because they didn't foster curiosity. Can you give me examples of those?
Yeah, one of the examples that I've studied quite a bit is the example of Ford, going back to the early 1900s. So I think the story of Henry Ford and the fact that it was really focused on one goal, reducing production costs to create a car for the masses. And he was very successful in doing that. But in the next few years, the market and the consumer's taste changed. So they wanted the different types of cars that add not only one model, but multiple models with different type of roofs, et cetera, et cetera. And Ford was so fixated on improving the Model T that he basically missed out on the opportunity of expanding productions and producing other different types of cars. And other competitors, such as General Motors, started producing an array of models and soon captured the main share of the market. And so owing to his single-minded focus on efficiency, Ford actually stopped experimenting and innovating in a way that made it fall behind.
Interesting. Are you familiar with the story of Xerox, which had a team that essentially invented the first personal computer, but the people above them didn't really know what it was and weren't interested?
That's an interesting one. I should add it to my repertoire.
I will send you a link for story. That. That's because they invented it. They had a group in Silicon Valley who invented it. They even invented email and a lot of protocols that we use today. But the managers at Xerox who were not in Silicon Valley did not know or understand what this is or how it can make their lives easier. We are talking about curiosity in the workforce. We're talking to Francesca Gino. She is a Harvard Business School professor who wrote a book on curiosity and rebelliousness. We are taking your calls on this. Are you a manager? Do you encourage your employees to be inquisitive, to challenge the status quo, to come up with new ideas? When you come up with new ideas, do you often feel like you get challenged back because it's not the way we do things? 800-642-1234. You can also email at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So I'm curious about this, Francesca. Are people more reluctant to embrace changemakers who are women and or people of color?
That's a really interesting question. So it's one that so many people have the belief that you have that somehow if we're part of a minority, and so race and gender would be examples of that, somehow breaking rules is going to be harder and is going to lead to some negative consequences. But the reality is that when you look at the data of female who broke rules or people of color who broke rules, they have the same benefits as other people in other categories. And so we have that belief, but the data actually speaks against it.
Interesting. As we move into more curious workplaces, talk to me about the benefits of being curious to the people who work in an organization, how they affect teams, how they affect communication.
So curiosity brings all sorts of benefits to our lives at work and also really outside of work. We talked about how being curious means that we are likely to make fewer decision errors when it comes to making choices. But also, curiosity is a really key aspect of being more creative and innovative. And when it comes to working together within teams or working with others in team project, people who are curious, so when curiosity is triggered inside of the team, there is less conflict. So it's interesting that curiosity allows us to be better able to put ourselves in the shoes of others in a way that when there is a disagreement, we are less likely to take it personally and allow the conflict to affect our performance in a negative way. And what it also allows in a team context is for more open communication. So often we come to a team project or to a meeting with very set ideas of what we want to see happen. And when we are curious instead, we're much more open to the views of others. And the result is a better one for the team or for the decision that is being made in the meeting.
So I can envision a team environment in which one person or two people don't particularly want to be curious. Other people do want to be curious, or the other way around. Like there's a couple of people who really do want to be curious, and everybody else is like, no, we've always done it this way. So how do you negotiate that?
So what is interesting is that curiosity can be contagious, especially if it's the leader setting the right tone for the discussion that is about to happen. And so I often talk about how one way to foster curiosity in the workplace is to have this what if or why or how might we type of days. And so you could imagine using the same strategies at the beginning or during a meeting or during a team project, being always the person who asks the question of why do we have to do it this way or what if we were to consider this different approach. And so if the leaders start using those type of questions, it's much more likely that others in the team, even if there are people who naturally are less curious, are going to pick up the same type of approach and start asking more questions. So what's fascinating about the research that my colleagues and I and others have done on curiosity is that yes, we are born with it, and we all have some tendencies to be more or less curious, but curiosity can also be triggered in a meeting, in an organization, in a workplace. And I think that that's quite important because it offers all sorts of possibilities to actually keeping curiosity alive.
So in an organization, we're in an organization now that has a lot of meetings that we go to, and we are on time crunches. And so I could see that if somebody comes up with, that's a great idea, and they want to go with it, that everybody else in the room is looking around going, oh, we only have 10 minutes left and we can't go here. We have to finish this. We have to get to the end of our agenda. How do you foster that?
When we look for why sometimes curiosity is shut down, it's actually because of what you just said, that we look at curious people as people who are going to slow us down and are going to make us inefficient. We're going to have meetings that are not for 60 minutes, but they're 2 hours because these people keep asking why questions.
Right.
What's important is for leaders to be clear on decisions or aspects where...
Francesca, we're going to have to answer this after the break. I'm sorry about that. It's the morning show. We'll be back in a minute. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Change is not always easy, and change makers are not always the most popular people in an organization, but they're necessary, says Harvard Business School professor and behavioral scientist Francesco Gino. She speaks to companies large and small to teach them how to embrace change and foster curiosity. Tell us about a time you were creative at work as part of your job. How did it help you? Did your supervisor support you, or were they not a fan of your curiosity? Does creativity in the workplace help you feel good about your job? Are you a manager? Do you encourage your employees to be inquisitive and challenge the status quo and come up with new ideas? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is where you can email us, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Francesca, we ended the last segment talking about being in those meetings where everybody is kind of pissed off at the person who just brought up a totally new idea that makes you rethink the direction you were going in, and there's only 10 minutes left in the meetings, and why does this person always do this?
So it's sometimes we think of curious people as those that are annoying and they don't let us get out of meetings when the time comes. But the reality of it is that the best companies and the best leaders are very clear in terms of clarifying when it's time to explore ideas and when it's time in the discussion to just come to a conclusion and get things done. So the mass meetings I've been part of are meetings where, again, this type of behaviors don't happen, and the curious people know when to shut up because it's time to come to a decision.
We talked about workplaces and schools tending to discourage curiosity. What do people think they get from discouraging curiosity?
I think is that they don't think about the cost of discouraging curiosity. I think that the focus is so much on efficiency and getting things done and getting ready to be able to answer tests correctly that it's just not given a lot of thought into the fact that there might be a cost to that approach, and that is really shutting down curiosity.
We are talking about curiosity in the workplace and at school. We are taking your calls. Was there a time where you were curious and got shut down? Was there a time when you thought, no, we do it this way, and a curious person came and asked questions that made you think about things? 800-642-1234. Most people, you conduct surveys, and what you have found is that most people feel like or don't feel like they're allowed to be inquisitive at work.
They do not. Some of the data was really striking and almost upsetting, really. For example, I In a survey, I reached out to more than 3,000 employees from all sorts of industries and firms, and only about 24% of them reported feeling curious in their jobs on a regular basis. So most people seem to face all sorts of barriers to asking more questions at work and staying curious.
And what do they do? What are some strategies that curious people might use to kind of keep that up?
So some of the strategies are related to not only having performance goals at work, which is something that we usually do have, but also coming up with learning goals. So that's a wonderful way to really stay curious and making sure that we ask questions. And when I surveyed leaders to see if they actually usually set learning goals for their employees, most of them said no. So it's very common for leaders to think about setting performance goals, but not so much setting learning goals. So I think that that's a good opportunity for change. We talked about the importance of also letting employees explore their interests or broaden their interests. Sometimes organizations provide resources to support employees' outside interests. So, for example, the manufacturing conglomerate United Technology in the past has given as much as $12,000 in tuition per year to any employees seeking a degree part-time. So no string attached. Whatever you wanted to explore, you could explore. So those are type of initiatives that allow people to explore their interests outside of work. Or there is another company, an Italian one, Brunello Cucinelli. They're in the luxury clothing, and he gives people money to explore culture around them. So if they want to go to museums or plays, even with their family, he's happy to pay for them. And so it's a way to explore interests outside of work in a way that fosters curiosity.
Should a company say to its employees, you have to leave the building and go to the museum across the street? We actually work in a building where there's a museum across the street, and I've never been to it. So should companies say 3 hours a week during your day, 1 hour every 3 days, you have to leave the building, you have to go to that museum across the street, or go to that cultural center down the street a little bit, or go eat or walk around? Should that be mandated?
So what I like about the examples of the companies I mentioned is that it's not mandated, but it's there if you want to. So it's a little bit of a nudge. So we don't like to be told what to do, but an encouragement or a little nudge is always helpful. So as in the case of Brunello Cucinelli, but also the other examples that I mentioned, the money and the resources are there if you want to use it. And so it's something that at least make people think about the possibility in a way that might be helpful to their curiosity.
We are taking your calls about curiosity in the workplace. 800-642-1234. John from Beloit, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, when does curiosity cross over into being nosiness, into just sort of being in somebody else's business when you're thinking of new ideas?
Thank you, John. Francesca?
So you can. I have definitely met people who are so curious that actually, in fact, become annoying. So to me, the fact that curious people often surround themselves with good friends or with good colleagues means also making sure that those colleagues tell you when you're crossing the line. And so in organizations that have a lot of curious people, usually colleagues give you sincere feedback about the fact that maybe in a meeting we really pushed it too far in a way that was not that helpful. So the most helpful solution for all the curious people out there is find the reliable and trustworthy colleagues who can give you feedback about your behavior, and they can tell you whether your curiosity is becoming annoying.
We are taking your calls here about curiosity in the workplace and at school and in life. 800-642-1234. You address the life part in your book, don't you, Francesca?
Exactly.
So how do we become more curious outside of work, you know, in our personal lives, in our social lives, just who we are?
So I think that one of the things that we can do is really trying to remember the type of the sense of wonder that we had when we were little children. And so really making sure that we often throughout the day do ask why questions and look for things that we tend to take for granted. So one of my favorite things to do these days is whether friends have certain traditions or if I'm in a workplace, whether I'm seeing processes that people tend to follow that seem to make little sense, to sort of start raising questions and say, why is it that you do it this way? And often people realize that the traditions are there just because they've been passed on or the same recipe has been followed for years, and in fact, it doesn't make sense. And so it's reminding ourselves, myself, of the importance of asking why questions. And also using the same approach when I'm in a conversation with my husband or when I'm parenting. So often when my children used to ask me questions, I gave them answer if I in fact had an answer. And nowadays I'm much more likely to ask them questions that could help them get to the answer.
So keep asking questions. So I'm curious. I'm a talk show host, so I am naturally curious. But I'm curious about organizations that sort of have a lot of layers that maybe have been entrenched in things. And you may have a manager and some employees who are curious about things, and the employees kind of push the manager a little bit. But the manager has a manager who has a manager who are like, that's the way we do things. So how do you deal with those kind of entrenched bureaucracies?
I would think carefully about how we deliver on curiosity, meaning how we express our curiosity. So take a company like Pixar. They use a technique that is called that they call plussing, and it's really a technique that finds its roots in improv comedy. Whenever you're in improv and you're building a scene, the principle that you need to follow is one of acceptance and then contribution. So they talk about the yes and.
Yes and.
If you said something, my response is to accept what you said and then build on it constructively. And plussing is exactly like that. So if somebody is suggesting an idea, you don't shut it down or criticize it. You accept it, and then you build on it. You might take us in a very different directions, but there is this moment of acceptance that is quite important. And so when, especially in very hierarchical organizations, if you're having a meeting or if you're having a discussion or if you want to suggest an idea, often there is a sense of frustration that brings us to criticize ideas or ways in which we have been doing things and then proposing our own. And I think remembering plussing and remembering this core principle of the improv comedy of the yes and can help us do better going forward in the way we express our curiosity.
Yes and is, because I came from the theater world, yes and is the way I live my life. So I'm really, really glad you said that. We are talking about curiosity in the workplace and perhaps in school and in your life with Francesca Gino, Harvard Business Professor. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We're going to be back in a moment with some of those calls on the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Letting go and exploring change is a tough thing. It's even tougher the more entrenched you or your workplace or your organization are in the normal way of doing things. Harvard Business School professor Francesca Gino says that that's to be expected, but accepting change will actually help you and your organization be better and more efficient. And she encourages rebels in the workforce. Do you think that's wise? Do you think companies tend to not risk letting employees be more curious? If so, why? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Adam from Eau Claire, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I love this conversation. Actually, just before break, I really appreciated your point about bureaucracy and stepping through those lines, but also the improv strategy of yes and.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about that a lot at my workplace as well. My comment comes, I work at a university in Wisconsin and supervise both student staff and professional staff, and some of my most talented employees are those that challenge the rules, ask for forgiveness instead of permission, and really do some pretty awesome and creative things. But some of those are both my most talented and sometimes most challenging. And it's difficult to, I think, to balance that as a supervisor, and especially when you talked about the bureaucracy being in middle management, where you have people who also have a bottom line watching you, your work.
Right.
My question comes in, actually, in both generational differences and ego, and wondering where... in maybe some older generations where hierarchy is more valued versus flatline or flat leadership, in which creativity is more fostered, and that's where a lot of our Gen Z and millennial people are coming from. And being able to, as a supervisor, check your ego in that your idea isn't the best idea and the other people can kind of the lose control, the gain control philosophy. So I didn't know if Francesca had any comments on ego and generational differences.
That's really fascinating. Thank you for that, Adam. Francesca, the generational differences and ego.
Yeah. So I have met rebels at all ages, but one of the things that Adam is saying that is very true is that often the more power we acquire in our professional experience, or the more experience we acquire because we've been in our jobs for longer, that often translates into confidence and a sense that we know it all. And when that happens, the reaction is that we see people that are questioning the status quo around us, and we're not that accepting of their questioning. So the best leaders or the best experienced people are those who use their power and their experience, not as a signal that they know it all, but as a signal that there is more to learn. So they're growing in their jobs with a lot of experience, but staying humble and still seeing the importance of learning and asking questions.
I want to get back to this improv thing, this yes and thing. I know that the Museum of Science and Industry, before they send their team, their docents out into the museum to work with people, they do some improv games. Like they do about 20 minutes of warm-up improv games. And they're like they're excited. They're ready to do it. I've seen this in theater. Also, before rehearsal, you do these games and you do these warm-ups. Is this a good thing to bring into the workplace? And how do you get past the you want me to do what and maybe embarrass myself sort of attitude?
So absolutely. I think that introducing this type of games or at least the spirit behind them when we are in a meeting or when you're about to take on a team project, especially when there is a lot of hierarchy, there are people who clearly have more power or more say, such that we put people at ease and we put them in a place where they feel that they can, in fact, contribute their ideas. So one of the important aspects of doing those warm-up exercises in improv is that you are at ease, and now you're better able to come up with sentences or jokes in a scene with strangers. So, yes, I think that there are a lot of opportunities for bringing in improv comedy type of ideas, exercises, and principles in the workplace.
Our last caller, Adam, talked about people asking, just doing it, and then not asking for permission, but asking for forgiveness. But I've also seen situations in which somebody just does it, and they ask for forgiveness, and the other people around them who didn't feel the freedom to just do it, or maybe who were afraid of getting in trouble, are now kind of pissed off and resentful that, well, he did it. Why did he get to do it?
Yeah, so both are possible, and I agree that I've seen cases of either in the workplace. It's interesting that the most successful organizations that encourage rebelliousness are organizations that are very clear on rules that should not be touched or broken. So there is much more transparency and clarity on places where you just execute, you just do your job and do not question and you don't break rules. So that's something that is quite important because I think avoids the type of problem of people breaking rules, even in situations where they shouldn't.
We are talking about being rebellious in the workplace, showing curiosity, maybe breaking some rules or questioning rules that you see. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Natalie from Eau Claire, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, thank you. I'm a vocational rehabilitation counselor for the state. And so we almost have a duty or a responsibility to be curious with our clients, our consumers, because we have to make fiscally responsible decisions in terms of what services to provide them. And part of my role in my counselor position is to help supervise our new counselors. And I'm just learning that taking a curious approach is not necessarily something that comes natural to most of them. They don't know what questions to ask or how to gather additional information from our job seekers. And I'm just wondering if Francesca has any tips on maybe how to help guide them in becoming more curious and asking more questions, you know, because that isn't coming naturally to them.
Natalie, thank you for that. Francesca?
So one of the things that this question reminds me of is what you hear when you start teaching at Harvard Business School. So the teaching is often case-based, which means that you're the curious person orchestrating the discussion and always trying to get students to tell you more about the way they're thinking about an issue. And so some of the techniques that help me become a better teacher, I hope, is to think about, I heard a statement, what is left for me to learn? How is it that I can follow up in a way that is going to allow me to bring out more information? And it's a very simple strategy, but it's actually one that once I have the goal in mind, which is getting more of the details out of the question, allows me to ask better questions. So sometimes I would frame the question in terms of, I've heard you saying this, but let me understand that a little bit better. Let me help me unpack it so that I understand your positions a little bit better. So you're also doing it in a way that is not threatening to the other person or make them wonder why you're asking the questions, but it's in a spirit and in an attempt for you to understand their viewpoint a little bit better. So I wonder whether similar strategies where the goal is really to trying to take more details out of the person could be a helpful way to start.
It also occurs to me that Natalie can simply sort of say, I want you to tell me five things about the person that you're trying to help get a job. And they don't necessarily have to be their job skill things. They could be random things like, do they like to fish? How many children do they have? What was their favorite subject in school? Whatever. That because they have to deliver this information to her, they have to kind of sort of get out of the script and ask questions that are different. Would that be some way to do it?
I like that. I also wonder whether you can practice outside of the job itself. So I'm thinking about some of the things that and techniques that are used during training at Pixar. And one of the exercises that they do is called bringing problems. So people come to the table and they've thought about a problem and everybody else sitting at the table need to ask a question. So they need to ask questions to show curiosity and not to be judgmental. And it's a really a good exercise to put you in that mind space of how do I learn more about what this person is facing in a way that could then help us get to a resolution.
Francesca Gino is an author, a behavioral scientist, and a Tandon Family Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School. She wrote a book called Rebel Talent, Why It Pays to Break the Rules at Work and in Life. Francesca, thank you for being with us today.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.